moment is Ronaldo! Brilliant! And it's Arsenal. There'll be 2 minutes of stoppage time. Man in the box if he can get it across. And he has it off the line. Shot and follow up. And it's turned in. And surely this time, Theo Walcott has won it. Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero! What's called a Giroud header? And talk about an instant impact. Arsenal really are motoring now.
Lui, Francesco Totti, gran gol, Roma. Strepitoso in questa lì.
Fabregas, it's Nasri. Can he go all the way here? Still Nasri. Looks for Xavi. Wonderful play from Arsenal. Arsene Wenger's philosophy put into practice, and not even Barcelona can come up with an answer.
And oh,
I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again. So watch it, drink it in.
Jack Wilshere to Zola, Giroud, Giroud again, Jack Wilshere. It's stunning from Arsenal.
Bradley swings it in invitingly. Oh my word! It's gone straight in. It's Bradley.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. We're your hosts, Joe and Reggie. Jam-packed show again every week. I keep saying that every week, Joe. Jam-packed.
But it really is, Reg.
It is. It really is jam-packed. Second half of the show this week, we have a special two-part interview. Well, the first part of a two-part interview with Patrice Geyser. He's coaching youth players here in the GTA.
Yeah, he's currently with Vaughan Soccer Club, their high performance program.
Right. So we sat down and we actually called in and we talked to him, and we tried to have it go a half an hour, but of course, you know, it goes way longer. So we decided to cut it into two parts. So the first part of that interview will be the second half of the show, and then we'll continue it the second half of the next show. But we'll also talk about a lot of things that happened this past week in the world of football. Some things that have just come out to light. Well, for some, not for us, right, Joe?
Yeah, we've heard of a few things for a while. We've heard some rumblings, if you want to call it that. We're going to run into those two guys, right? It's the young guys.
Well, we will. We'll do that.
We'll talk about it.
We'll do that the first.
I'm excited about it.
You should be. We'll do that the first segment of the show. Okay. We're actually going to start off with the goal of the week, but I won't be doing that one, and it'll become apparent why.
You know, like, it's such a great goal.
It is, but I just can't talk about it. But anyways, so that's how we'll start this show. We'll also do no flat four this week because we're packed. We'll probably bring it back.
We want to keep you waiting, keep you hungry for it. So you'll get a good. We had a great one last week.
Yeah, people like that segment, so we'll definitely keep it going. We have a new form. Well, not a new form. We revived the form. So go on there. You can start topics. You can talk to other like-minded football people about topics throughout the world. And it's yours. Talk about whatever you want. We just ask that you respect everybody in there, but go nuts in there.
And maybe that's where you guys give us an idea of what you want to hear on the show. Yeah, we always get like, why didn't you guys talk about this? Let us know, right? So we can. This is one way we can know, and we can tell you and tell the others what you want to hear.
Exactly. So as usual, you can get to our podcast via our website, which is footballweekly.com. It's FUTBOLweekly.com. Joe, how else can you get our podcast?
Can I say Stitcher?
You can say Stitcher.
That's good, yeah. And, and the other podcatchers out there, is that it?
Exactly. You can also
Player FM, is that one?
You can get us on Player FM. You can subscribe on Player FM, tune in, Stitcher. And the big one, iTunes. And best of all, this is all free for you guys. Share it, download it. There's a number of different ways you can get to us.
That's a bargain basement price of free.
Free,
so.
Of course. You can subscribe to our podcast via email as well. Joe, you ready?
You got it.
Okay, so sit back, relax, and let's get stuck in with the Football Weekly Podcast. We'll be back after this.
Torres. Now it drops for Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
So this week's goal of the week comes from the EPL. many of you out there are like, yeah, no kidding. All you guys do is cover the EPL. And anyways,
well, but this is a no doubt.
It is a great goal, but I can't talk about it. So,
well, listen, it came from North London.
It did come from North London, but I'm not even going to say what I'm.
Oh, not like not the right side. Okay, I'm trying to figure out. We have a lot of Gunners fans who listen, and we love that, and follow us, and we support you too. But you know, this week, Reggie. So yeah. When this goal happened, it was in real time. I text you, and I didn't get like a as quick as a response.
I don't watch those type of games. I don't watch inferior teams play. So.
Nothing inferior about the goal. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. This is the goal. This is how it sounded.
Enthusiastic.
Have a listen.
Are you beauty? What a headshot! What a head!
Fans are booing for handball. Kane's ball in. Delaney meets it. Trippier again. They're not stopping the crosses coming in here, Palace. Ali. Great skill. Oh, what a goal! Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League, and into the Tottenham history books with a glorious goal!
What a goal this is, Gary. The skill level of this is absolutely remarkable. Absolutely brilliant. His awareness, spatial awareness of where he is on the pitch and who's in and around him is absolutely amazing. There's the crossfield ball from Kane to Eriksen, on to Ali. He goes past Jedinak, and what a strike this is! Absolutely world class from Dele Alli as he flicks it past him on the volley, past Scott Dan. Wayne Hennessy doesn't see it till late, but this is absolutely top quality from this young man and worthy of winning any game.
Absolutely stunning, and even the manager wants to pat his young midfielder on the back.
Are you beauty? What a headshot! What a head!
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, you know, I was expecting dead air, so that was pretty much a victory that you even said that. It's pretty good, he says.
Pretty good. Okay, it's not quite Gaza, Paul Gaza going territory.
Okay, can I say it for everybody? Wow. This was a great goal. From start to finish, what do you want? Like, what more do you want? The setup to it, how he tees it up, takes a touch over, coordinates himself. Reggie, if you guys can see his face now, wouldn't be... But what a great goal. That's a fantastic goal by Dele Alli. And sorry, Reggie, not from the Gunners. Another North London club from Spurs. Great goal. Wow.
Are we done?
Okay, we're done.
Okay.
One more. What a wow. Like, okay. Just, you know.
No, get it all out. Get it all out.
Just a great one, Reg. Yeah, wow. Fantastic. You got to appreciate this thing, Reg.
Yeah, it's a good goal.
It's okay. There you have it, guys. My debut in introducing the What a Hit.
No Giroud, but speaking of Giroud and North London and all that, we're going to get into the Arsenal versus Chelsea
Was it like controversial?
No, okay. Not at all.
I didn't think so.
Depends what view you take of it.
I think we're okay, but we'll talk about that a bit later.
I don't like to talk about Arsenal. It's my team. I don't usually talk about Arsenal, but I got a couple of things to say this show. So
that's a shocker.
We'll definitely talk about that. Yeah. But right now, we're going to talk about Canadians abroad.
Yes.
And what they're doing in different leagues throughout the world. We're going to specifically speak on one player who's playing in the Greek Super League?
Yeah, they call it the Greek Super League. So it's the equivalent of the first division, the top tier of football in Greece.
Right.
So, you know, the traditional powers are Olympiakos, AEK, Panathinaikos, more recently Olympiakos playing in Champions League and so on.
Right.
So, yeah, the young player, we mentioned them, I think, last week, Reg.
Mm-hmm. And times before that as
that's
well.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Emmanuel Zambassas, they call him, we used to call him Mano.
Right.
They knew, speaking to his dad, I saw some clips and the name was spelled differently. They're calling him there Manolos. So if you see it's Manolos, that's him. Zambassas is the player. He's a 1997 born kid. Made a lot of youth appearances for the Canadian youth national team. I had the pleasure of working with him, coaching him for a couple of years, and I'm not just being humble. I don't take any credit for him. He was fantastic when he got to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was just try to stay out of his way. We'll talk more about him and his history on another show. But it was great that this week I actually had a chance, not only to email him, which I've been doing for a while, but I actually got to speak to him right after a cup game.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, I spoke to his dad, and then phone call came in, and sure enough, it was him.
Oh, wow.
And we had a chance to speak, which was pretty amazing. So just a little time frame. They played the game. It was yesterday. They played Greek Cup against AEK. Unfortunately, didn't have the best result. They lost 4-1.
Okay.
Emmanuel came in the 75th minute. Had a little bit of an impact, obviously. The only goal that they scored, he took a shot from about 28 yards out. The goalie parried it. Goalie did pretty poorly, we said. Well, maybe we'll put the goal up on our website one day.
Yeah, we can do that.
But, you know, he took a confident shot, strikes the ball from about 30 yards out, and then his teammate heads it in. So it wasn't the result he wanted, and in talking to him, and that's the type of kid he is, player he is, pretty amazing that he's playing in a professional environment like that at his age. This is, by the way, this is his second year with the club, and it's called, I should have said it, Heracles, right? And so he was just, you know, obviously disappointed that they didn't have a better
result
showing, for sure. But, you know, he was, again, happy to get some minutes, and that's always a challenge for a young player, is getting the minutes and not only, you know, the training, which is great. But, yeah, he talked about that in the previous email. He talked about, you know, just like you guys would have heard Mathieu Laurent say, you know, hard work, and it sounds like it's a cookie cutter answer, but he just says he's just going to keep working hard in training, keep trying to put the pressure on the coach by just doing well. And so
right.
He had just finished the game, he had just gone through the team dinner and so on, and they were heading to sleep, and it was about, you know, 10 o'clock their time. So the life of a pro, I know there's a lot of glitz and glamour, but, you know, he had to recover, get some food in him, you know, the ice bath, all that stuff, and then they were off to bed. So there it is, another Canadian kid doing big things in one of Europe's leagues, and he's in the top league, so hopefully we see him soon in a national team uniform, and we'll talk more about that probably in the next week or two.
Well, it's good that the Canadian national team keeps tabs on all their players, right? So
hope that they do, for sure, and make sure that they know where they are around the world, and hopefully bring them back into the squad.
Right, or for the first time. So another another player, actually.
Yeah.
Canadian player from actually our area.
That's right.
That was playing abroad in Scotland for one of the major teams in Scotland, Glasgow Rangers.
Yeah, pretty amazing news.
Fraser Aird has just recently signed. Joe walked in the door and told me, hey, did you hear the news?
Yeah.
And I was like, what news is that?
Well, Reg, we've heard rumblings.
Right.
So we didn't, again, because we don't just want to blurt stuff out. And exactly. We want to make sure, and we want to respect some of these players that, you know, we have connections to and so on. We want to respect their privacy. We had heard some rumblings, and it was on Twitter too. But,
right.
You know, we didn't really. And that, you know, Fraser would be joining Vancouver Whitecaps,
mm-hmm.
the MLS outfit, on loan for the year. And today it became official.
Right.
So it's great news. And just from the Whitecaps Twitter feed, you know, Fraser's quoted as saying, I'm delighted to join Vancouver Whitecaps FC. Hopefully I can come in and help the team and improve as a player under Carl Robinson. So I think that little quote speaks volumes. We had said that Fraser, again, he went in with Rangers with a bang. He was playing first team football in his first year there, you know, as just like a young player, sometimes falling out of favor, still being in the squad. So he never left the squad. He wasn't getting the appearances that obviously we had hoped for his development. So this is great news that he is now getting that chance again. And, you know, it's a loan. Obviously, Rangers still keeping an eye on that situation. Carl Robinson, I think, had a lot to do with this. Former of TFC fame and so on. He's had a lot of great reports as a coach, too, from what we've heard and so on. Of course, we're not directly involved, but Vancouver's a good situation. We talked about Emmanuel Zambasis, too. Funny enough, about 2-3 years ago, he was playing for myself in a youth club here in the GTA, and he actually went out to Vancouver for a trial with the youth academy, and he was asked to stay. But at that time, the best situation for him, he wanted to come home, stay home, you know, finish school and so on and so on. But
right.
They are, you know, I'm sure that they are still aware of where he is and so on. So it's kind of interesting for him. And this is great for Fraser that hopefully he gets a chance to maybe revitalize some of his playing.
When you told me that, we talked about it. And the first thing I thought of was, well, why didn't he come play for TFC? And we always think that'd be great for our team. But you also have to look on the pressure it's going to put on the actual player. Now that he's playing in front of all his friends, all his family, get me tickets, let's go out, you know what I mean?
And for
it's
sure.
Like, it's kind of better for players to go somewhere where they don't know anybody and they have to, maybe their only real friend that they can hang out with is someone else on the team. So you build that bonding and things like that. So
I think so, Reg. I think for Fraser in this case, and again, not knowing him very well, but knowing him,
right.
You know, I've actually had a great opportunity. I coached him for 1 year in his youth soccer. Again, taking not much credit for it, just was lucky enough to be involved with him with our guest next week, which we'll talk about, or in the weeks to come. But I think it's a good situation for him, just like you said. I think concentration level would be a little bit higher here. He knows that this is a chance for him that he needs to take, that he, you know, wants to get back and be in the spotlight in terms of gaining confidence, experience, so he can build on a great performance that we talked about with the Canadian national team when he played for a half against Ghana.
Right.
You know, where he played right back, and Fraser's usually been an attacking midfielder. So he showed his versatility, and there's talks from what we're reading that, yeah, Whitecaps, they do have an opening at right back. Of course, Bédéjour coming here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying that you're going to give him a fair shot there. Just a prediction, I wouldn't be surprised if Fraser ends up playing some midfield areas too and attacking spots. He's just, you know, on a personal, he's a very dynamic player who likes to go at guys, be involved. You know, Fraser's lethal getting to the byline and attacking players and setting plays up. He can, you know, strike a ball with both feet. So I'm excited. Obviously, you could tell my personal bias here, but I think, again, even in his quote, to improve as a player under Carl Robinson, I think we're going to get to know Carl Robinson. Robo was a big part of this, and I think that that's going to be a quality thing for Fraser. Carl Robinson's a great guy, and I hope that he can help continue with Fraser's development.
I like him coming to the MLS as well, because sure, it's very easy for, say, a national team call-up, if you're already in Canada, especially if you're already in Canada playing in Vancouver,
right,
or if you're, even if you're in North America, it's easier to fly around. And so many times we were playing games, and
that's a good point.
You know, Glasgow can't release them because they're playing, and it's a 12-hour flight.
That's right.
This, and they don't want to put them through that. And it's,
yep,
it's easier now that, you know, and they're actually playing March 1st in Vancouver.
That's
so
right.
He's already going to be there.
That's right.
So it's so easy for the national team setup to just call in these guys if they're already in North America.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Reggie.
You know, so this is a great thing for Fraser, I believe, and it's also a great thing for people, fans of the Canadian national team as well.
For sure. So, you know, good luck to everyone involved.
Good luck indeed. So Joe touched on it a little bit. We're going to have a guest on, not next week, because that's the second half of
Patrice's right.
interview is next
weeks.
Week. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a man on who actually coached Fraser and Emmanuel, is that correct?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Coached both of them. So
coached and a couple others too.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about Michael Petrasso, Jordan Hamilton. So
right. So if you know those names, this guy coached them all. So we're gonna have him on in, what would I say, 2 weeks?
That's what you said.
We're jammed, Joe.
We're getting a lot of great guests on, and they want to come on. Those of you guys listening to us weekly, you know, Reggie's been working, putting things together, and he's what makes us sound, or myself sound, decent here. And
Joe,
all that
it's
stuff.
Easy. It's easy with you.
I like that, Reg. You know, and we've been trying to get interviews and people on that, you know, that are relevant to what we're doing. So
right.
we just secured a couple more, so
right.
we'll be, you know, listing those guys out.
And Joe does all that stuff. Joe lines them up and finds them out, sniffs them out, coordinates the time. So I think we're a pretty good team, eh, Joe?
This is like a loving today. Everyone wants us to fight, you know? We're not going to fight. We'll fight later.
Not yet.
This is a setup. This is like bringing the flowers home.
Right, exactly.
What did you do? Oh, we got something for you today.
So before we get into that, we'll talk about, I guess we want to talk about Serie A.
Wow, look at how far we've come.
And Juve, I guess.
Well,
yeah, I know. Serie A again in the first half of the show. It's crazy.
Well, are we getting right into the Reg?
Sure.
11 wins in a row.
Yeah.
It's a juggernaut now. And it's when Pirlo left and Tevez left,
yep,
and then they sold Vidal.
Mm-hmm.
We use this word a lot, identity. What's going to be their identity?
Right.
Is Paul Pogba ready? Yes, he is.
Yep.
He is taking over. And that player that we said, again, this is everyone's saying it now, but Dybala,
mm-hmm,
this guy is, it's every week growing in confidence. And they link up for the winning goal here again.
Right.
You know, last week, Dybala slipped through by Pogba, and Dybala slots home. And ho-hum, Juventus gets another victory. So that's 11 wins in a row, keeping the heat on Napoli.
Pressure up the top, eh?
Yeah, it is pressure. Do we see anybody else going one or two? I think it's a Napoli-Juventus showdown. I still am calling Juventus to win, Reg. I just think the experience and the quality that they possess, and, you know, been there, done that kind of deal.
Well, it's about time we had a battle, right?
Yeah, they haven't been really tested. The tests have been, you know, Roma in the last couple of years, and then they're falling off.
Right.
You know, Roma's still trying to find an identity.
Right.
You know, Spalletti's still trying to find something. They did sign Stephen El Shaarawy.
Oh, Roma did.
Today, I think it became official yesterday, so they have him.
He was done at Monaco, right?
Yeah, I think they bought him outright,
yeah.
I think. But anyway, he's with them. They've shipped out Gervinho.
China, right?
To China, which, yeah. I mean, who didn't go to China this week?
Right, Ramirez went as well.
Yeah, man. So there's a lot of guys. So same old things apply. AC Milan. We talked about this team, Empoli, who've been just almost as good as Reggie's favorite team.
Sassuolo.
Thank you, Reggie. So there's Empoli again, who I think they're just 1 point out of Europe or 2 or 3 points. It doesn't matter. This is Empoli, a small team. And again, Carlo Saponara doing great things. Looks like he will probably make a Juventus move in the summer. That's what they're saying. Formerly, we talked about him too. Massimo Macaroni used to play in the EPL, scoring again. So they tie 2-2 against AC Milan. They're not going away. They're right. doing the Leicester City, Crystal Palace, Bournemouth thing.
Right.
And they're just doing it in Serie A. And those teams are Reggie's team, which is
Sassuolo.
Thank you. And they're not going away. Right. These teams aren't going away. And they're exciting to watch. They're going for it. They have young managers who are full of energy. So that's where we are there. This week we have the Milan Derby.
Inter AC?
That's right.
Really?
Yeah.
Which what is it this week? The San Siro or the Giuseppe Meazza?
That's the same thing, Reg. I thought we went over this.
Yeah, I know, but who's the home team?
The home team, I think. You know what, Reggie? I believe it might be AC Milan.
So it's the San Siro.
But, you know, to me it's this.
It's the same.
For me. I know we're going to get people say it, but, you know.
I don't know how two big teams share a stadium, but whatever.
That
hate each other. I don't understand, but okay.
And that's why we need that to be totally right. Again, AC Milan is supposed to have a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And those talks are always, it's Italy. It's so convoluted. But Inter had some news, too. They signed Eder today on a 2-year loan, which usually means after the year, they're probably going to buy him.
Right.
So that's big news. And then, so he's leaving Sampdoria. I mean, again, this is another naturalized Italian, Brazilian descent, plays for Italy as well.
Right.
Right. So it is AC Milan as the home team.
Okay, so it's the San Siro.
It doesn't make sense, though. No, no, I think it might be the other way around. Yeah. Can someone just let us know that?
Well, I told you at the beginning when Joe first came, started to host with me, that those are the only games I watch. AC versus Inter.
We got to really get him to watch
AC,
it, though.
Yeah, but I'm starting to enjoy the Serie A, actually. So
wow.
I won't say that too loud or too many more times, but starting to watch it. It's more interesting now that there's 4 or 5 teams that are actually competitive instead of it just being either AC 1 year or Juve the next year. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
So anything with a little bit of competition at the top, I'll watch.
And Reg, in saying that,
yes,
I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Coppa Italia, which happened this week.
Right.
So we had Juventus playing Inter,
right,
and which is usually dubbed Derby of Italy.
The Derby d'Italia.
That's right. Derby d'Italia. Very good, Reg.
Thank you.
And actually, since we're on that, Milan-Inter is the Derby della Madonnina. Oh, Reg. Talk about that.
Next week.
Yeah, that's too much for this week.
Next
but
week.
But anyway, yeah, so Juventus beats Inter 3-0 in leg one of the semifinals. So I think it's safe to say, Reg,
They're through.
AC Milan played Alessandria. Like a Lega Pro team. Division 3.
Right.
It was 1-0, Reg, on a penalty shot.
Oh, wow.
PK by Balotelli.
Wow.
Yes, Milan hit posts and stuff, but I'm sorry. You got it, right?
Division 3.
And let me tell you, Balotelli scores a penalty, doesn't celebrate, and he doesn't celebrate because he knows how poor he was. Like, he was terrible in this game, Rich.
Oh, was he?
And Mihailovic comes out and says he's not ready to play the derby. He's not fit yet, and so on.
And when did he come back from injury?
He played against Empoli, if you want to call it that. Played 15 minutes. Was poor.
Right.
No conviction here. Again, you keep trying to cheer for him and want him to revitalize his career because he has immense talent, but
it's
starting to, that window's starting to close for me. And I never thought I'd say that. Anyway, so it looks like possibly we might have an AC Milan-Juventus final, but hey, stranger things have happened. Don't count out Alessandria.
Was that a home game for AC?
It wasn't. That's the only thing. Oh, okay. It was on the road. It was played in actually where Torino plays, because Alessandria is in the same region. So there you have it, Reg.
Okay. So Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we should take a break or if we should get right into it.
You might need a break.
I don't need a break.
You're okay?
Joe. We teased it a little bit, actually. I think we teased it a little bit before the game started. Chelsea versus Arsenal.
Oh.
And we talked about this being Arsenal's year. If they were going to win the EPL, this is the best year that they could have done it because Man United isn't doing that well.
Check.
Chelsea isn't doing that well.
Double check.
Liverpool's not doing that well.
I'm going to have to agree with that there.
City's not. Well, we beat City. City's not playing the, best. They're not lights out like
they're not running away from anybody.
Exactly. We have to watch out for Leicester
and
then Tottenham.
Yeah, and we've said Leicester, you know, with all due respect to them, no one's a bigger fan right now than us.
Right.
In terms of what they're doing. Well, maybe me because they're battling Arsenal. But, you know, it's still, if you want to be battling, it's easier, traditionally, it's been easier to battle with a team that not accustomed to being at the top.
Right. Because the pressure, once the pressure gets
on
them,
a big club.
Exactly. You don't. Yeah. Some of the players might not know how to handle it, and it all comes down to how you handle pressure when you're coming down to the last, I guess, couple of weeks of the season. But Joe, and I know we disagree.
Well, let's get to where we agree.
We agree on the score. That's
no,
pretty
let's,
much it.
I agree. We agree that they needed to show their teeth here.
That's exactly it. Like you said, this is the year that they have to win it. The stars are aligned for them to win it this year.
That's six straight games, I believe, Reggie, without a goal against Chelsea.
We'll get into that as well.
Now, just before we're going to bite into that, interesting note, because we're talking about AC Milan, Leicester City had an offer, I think, for about $16 million for Niang, which I believe the report I read was that they were considering it, AC Milan, but at last report they're saying they've declined it. But here's Leicester. They're looking to...
They're going for it.
They're going for it. So they're looking at, you know, obviously not buying the biggest players, but they are looking to say, hey, maybe we could be a buyer. So that was an interesting one for me. You know, as a fan of AC Milan, I don't want to see him go, but again, just to let you guys know, that was the offer and it was pretty serious. So anyhow.
Getting back to Arsenal-Chelsea.
You going first?
Listen, for those of you that didn't see it or don't know what happened, Per Mertesacker gets a red card in the first, 20 minutes of the game?
Yeah, pretty much, 23, yep.
So, people that know soccer, it's a defender, playing a rival, gets a red card. You got to take someone else off and put a defender on, okay? The player that Arsene Wenger decided to take off was Olivier Giroud to bring on another defender. I hit the floor. If you look at the faces of the people in the stands, everyone was shocked.
Right.
Everybody was shocked.
Except for me? Okay.
Except for Joe and a couple of other people that I talked to. And I don't understand the mentality.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Are we going to try to explain this to you now?
I would love for you to explain it. Listen, Joe, I know that when you get a red card, you probably take an attacking player off. I understand that. But the situation between Arsenal and Chelsea and where we are in the standings and how important this game is, knowing that City won, Leicester won, Tottenham won, we have to win this game. So please explain to me how that move makes sense. I would love to hear this. I've been waiting all week for this.
I'm pumped for this. So Reg, I think we're all in agreement in the big picture that yes, you got to win that game. But I think here at the very least, you cannot lose the game. They end up losing it. I get it. But the thought process here, I can understand what Wenger was saying.
Oh, please explain it. Please.
So you go down a man early.
Okay.
Right? So there's still the tone of the game is still not really clear, but you go down a man early.
Okay.
So he's thinking, you know, I got to protect this and try to get him on a counter and try to get a goal here and there.
So pretty much you're playing for a tie unless you get something.
Unless you get a great opportunity. And maybe you create it on a counter and so on.
Okay.
So he takes off Giroud, he still has a lot of attacking.
He does?
I think so.
Okay.
Who do you have on the field left?
To attack?
Yeah.
Ozil, Campbell, and Walcott.
I'm okay with that.
Are you?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Well, okay, you're Joel saying this.
Joel Campbell has 2 goals in his whole career at Arsenal, and Theo Walcott hasn't scored in a month and a half.
I think he was thinking that Campbell might be able to protect and defend better than Giroud. Now, I'm not agreeing with him, but I'm thinking he was thinking, and this is why it's odd for Arsene Wenger, because this is not his MO. And I think Arsene Wenger, people are going to call me crazy. I think what he was thinking and what he did proves that he's trying. It's almost Mourinho-like what he did. It's crazy, isn't it?
So you're telling me, okay, no, finish.
Well, because he's in 10, Reg. So I think he figured that maybe Campbell will help, you know, would work harder in terms of a defensive responsibility.
So you're not going for it then?
He wasn't. No, obviously he's not going for it, Reggie, if he's taking him out. But and I don't think I think you try to pick your points here. And I think you go down to 10 men. You're still playing Chelsea. You know, he wanted to keep it safe and try to hit them on a counter or so on. And I think the defensive work that he might have found with Joel Campbell, he wasn't going to get out of Olivier Giroud. I know people are throwing stuff in the Arsenal camp and you guys are thinking I'm crazy. I'm not saying I totally agree with it, but I can see how he did it. I can totally see how he did it. And it was a tactical decision, and he's going to have to live with it. And I don't think it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the worst thing you can do. Of course, when you're down and you lose 1-0, what if it was 0-0 and they don't drop any point, or they drop more points, but they drop less points here? Mm-hmm. Are we having a different discussion?
Probably.
Okay. Now, again, you're saying, but hey.
But five minutes later, they score, and now we're done. now we're done.
This poor Arsene Wenger, he finally tries to make something. He finally tries to do something that's, you know, the safe, sound thing to do, and he's getting beat up for it.
So, Joe, you're coaching PSG.
You take off Ibrahimovic.
You take off Ibra? David Luiz gets a red card. You're playing Marseille. It's a top of the table clash, which this wasn't, but you need the points to stay in touching distance
I'd
of first place.
I'd probably take off.
You take off Ibra?
I'd probably take off. Who is it?
How about Lavezzi?
Lavezzi, for sure.
How about that?
I see why.
Okay. And then leave Lavezzi and Lucas on while you take off Ibra? It's crazy, Joe.
I think he to make the substitution of an attacking player coming off, he probably should have taken off Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his thinking was.
Or Lavezzi. Walcott.
But again, the opposite of it. And here, what are you guys thinking? He's probably the outlet, right? Giroud is your only outlet. If you're going to get a goal, is it going to be off a set piece? All that stuff, right?
But Joe, we talk about the outlet. And Giroud is my outlet.
Yeah.
Because he's the only guy that can really hold off Zuma and Terry back there.
If you're playing in 10. But yeah, I can see. I get it. I get what you guys are saying.
There's no way. If we're in any type of pressure, we just need to pump it up the ball. There's no way that ball's not coming right back down our throat in 5 seconds.
Yeah, his thinking. I think poor Arsene Wenger here in terms of he's getting destroyed, and maybe rightfully so by the Arsenal fans as yourself. But I can see why he did it.
I know an attacking player has to come off. We're not arguing.
You're just
that.
Saying it's Joel Campbell.
It can't be Giroud. When you need goal, and you brought it up, they haven't scored a goal Chelsea in six games. That's 3 seasons. So that's the last time they scored a goal. Robin van Persie scored for us. Now, how long ago was that?
So you haven't scored
a goal against this team in 3 seasons.
But I don't think that can be the consideration, right? You got to look at it in that situation, in each little situation.
Definitely.
Right? So I think here, he really, did he come out and say anything, Reg? Did he acknowledge any of that? Or
You know, Arsene Wenger.
He didn't say much.
I tried to do something, and it didn't work. So
He's admitting I messed up, right? Is he not?
He'll never say that, because the next question is probably, would you do it again? He goes, well, you have to look at the situation.
Kind of what I said.
You know what I mean? So he goes around it. He doesn't say that. He doesn't admit he was wrong. He goes around the situation, and finally the interviewer gets tired and lets him go. So that's pretty much. And I'm sure. I just Walcott against Terry and those guys. It never works out. It never works out. It hasn't worked out in years for this guy.
Walcott is still the enigma that is.
But Walcott has a 10-year anniversary with Arsenal. They made him the captain, and that's the reason why we can't take him off the field. It would have either been him or Campbell, but for me, it would have been Campbell that came off.
What shocked me is that he took off Giroud in this campaign, like in terms of how good his form has been.
Well, that's another thing.
You know, that's the only thing. Again, if we're looking at it, I gave you guys what I thought he was thinking tactically. Who knows? I mean, like you said, but you know, I think in this particular season, you know, if you're going to be allotted a few more mulligans, you know, the chance to make a mistake, this would be the one. Mm-hmm. In the same breath, we just finished saying, hey, they should have to show some gumption here and go for it.
Right.
But I think going for it down to 10 men. He played this for the first time, or for one of the few times I've seen. This was an example of Arsene being really guarded. But I get why he would have made that move, a move of taking off an attacking type player.
No problem with that.
We're in agreement that we're shocked that it was Giroud.
Yeah.
I'm not in agreement with saying we had to go for it. I think you have to be really careful here. Because if you go for it, sometimes if they lost that game, Reg, call me crazy, but let's talk about it in May. If they lost that game by 2-3 goals, I think the mental psyche of Arsenal would have been shaken. This way, hey, maybe this is all on Arsene. Maybe this is all on Arsene, this one. And maybe that's a good thing, instead of it just being them losing 3-0.
Well, I'm not saying go down a man and then just open it up and just go forward.
It's a personnel thing for you. Took off the wrong guy.
I think he took off the wrong guy.
Because I'm hearing everyone say, they should have went for it. So,
I don't think
going for it, but maybe with some other personnel.
We watch the game and Arsenal have their moments, but they get down the wing. Bellerin gets down the wing. Monreal gets down the wing and you're ready for, okay, yeah, serve it. And it's just like, oh yeah, right. Giroud's not there. Who's going to win a head ball? Sanchez, 5'9". Walcott, 5'10". Who's going to win a head ball against Zuma and Terry back there? And even Matic was dropping back and Ivanovic was there. You're not winning any head ball. So now what do you do on the wing? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, again,
you gotta. Those are the only types of chances you're probably gonna get.
Like, again, if you're thinking you're playing, you know, against, in 10, I should say, not against, but in 10.
Right.
Yeah. Listen. Again, I think that he was looking at the work rate and so on, but I disagree with, you know, the guy coming off. I probably wouldn't have taken off Giroud. Everyone needs to relax here. This guy is. I don't know if he made, like, the absolute worst choice here. I think steady wins the race here, Arsenal fans. Relax. Yeah. I don't think that this is going to be... Call me crazy. I'm not sure this is going to be the one that's going to be decisive.
No.
What did Leicester do? They win?
Yeah. One win drops you to... One loss drops you to third place, though, eh?
Okay, so what are they now?
They're third.
How many points they got? How many points are they away from first?
I think one or two.
Okay, and what? Man City's two.
Man City's two, Leicester's first.
Yeah, Reg, this is going to come down... The last week, I think. You already know my prediction.
What's your prediction?
It's going to be Arsenal.
Okay. They play Southampton next day in the league. Team had just pumped them 4-0 earlier.
The next game.
It doesn't get easier.
What game is easy in the EPL?
And then they play Leicester. I think the game after that is Leicester.
So, you know, what game is easy? We've talked about
this. That's true.
So, again, Mr. Wenger. The guy, I know no one wants to hear it. People are throwing stuff. You're crazy. A lot of Gunners fans loved your support, but I don't think it's that bad. Reggie doesn't agree.
It's only one game. I get it, but it's just that it's one game. If it's Norwich, okay, whatever. But it's Chelsea, it's again we didn't score.
You're letting it get personal, Reg.
Well, no, but I mean, it's one of the teams that you look forward to playing against.
Right.
You look forward to playing against Tottenham. You look forward to playing against United some years, not this year. You look forward to playing against Chelsea, Liverpool. Those are the City. Those are the big games you look forward to. And you get yourself hyped up for the whole week, and it's over in 25 minutes.
I think here, though, Reg, I think here you have to look at it. If you're trying to win the championship, if you're trying to win the title, I should say.
Yeah.
The managers, of course, by very nature, we're going to get more emotional toward playing one team or another. But at the same time, they have to take that out of it and just look at, okay, we got to do what's right in this situation.
Mm-hmm. And what's right in that situation was taking off your informed striker.
I can see why he did.
Okay. All right. Well,
am I giving you a very political, legal type, type answer?
You are, but I understand, like I said, three times, I understand taking off the attacker. I don't know why you take him off. So we agree on he shouldn't have taken off Giroud. Should we talk to Patrice now or what?
I think we're done, right? Yeah, he's probably going to agree with you. But anyway, listen, I'm going to defend Wenger. Can we leave it at that?
Okay.
Can we agree to disagree today?
It took me about 3 days for me to get off the Wenger out hashtag. But yeah, okay.
Steady, Reg. Relax.
Okay, I'm
breathe.
Cool. But it's just... okay. All right. Cool.
You know what? Okay. You want me to get on him?
No. I don't want you.
Here's what I'll leave it at.
Okay.
Paramertesacker should never be on the field.
Why? And that's another thing. Why is Paramertesacker or Arteta our team captain?
Well, Paramertesacker should not be on the team.
He shouldn't be. I right after the game, and it's not because he gave away the red card.
His best days are behind him, and they've been behind him for a while.
I told Edson, who we have on the show time before.
That's right.
I told him, I don't understand why every single team in the league doesn't just run straight at this guy. He's not going to catch you.
No, and the spaces behind him are dangerous.
Just play it over the top, over his head and run onto it.
Listen, I think that is your mistake. I mean, eventually he's going to cost you. Maybe this is the good that comes from it. I mean,
He's out for the next three.
Okay,
but,
can I ask a question? Yeah. Why? He got three games, right?
Yeah.
So why isn't Gabriel playing regularly? Or was he playing?
Oh, you saw Arsene Wenger walking through here? I have no idea.
See, now, was he trying to protect him against Diego Costa here?
Why would he do that?
I don't know. But he's got to be a first-team regular.
Arsenal fans have been saying this since August.
So I think what we're saying here, maybe we've come to a conclusion here. On what we're hammering Arsene for, we agree.
Team selection?
Yeah. Gabriel has to play.
Arteta and Mertesacker shouldn't even dress. And it, like I said, it's not because of the penalty shot. They're both done. They're not fast enough to play in this league.
I think Arteta has seen better days.
MLS.
Yeah.
Come on down.
That's right.
And I'm not saying that because he's garbage and MLS is a garbage league. No, but, you know, it is a step below EPL.
I think we can agree on that.
Okay. So I'm not saying anything that's ridiculous.
No.
So Arteta, Mertesacker, just ride gently off into the sunset. If you still want to keep playing.
I don't think Per Mertesacker can do anything gently.
Gently,
but,
right. Anyway, clopping around back there.
Oh.
See what I did?
That was good. Are we done here?
Yeah, okay. That's finished it. That's right. I'm done. So the last half of the show, we're going to talk to Patrice Geiser. Another very informative interview. If you liked our interview with Ilya Orlov, you'll definitely like this interview.
For sure.
And we'll start that right after this.
Modric takes. It's a header from Sergio.
So this week's special guest on the Football Weekly podcast, we have Patrice Geiser. For those of you that aren't familiar with Patrice, we are going to give a little bit of a brief introduction and then get right into it. Joe's known him for
a long time.
How long would you say, Joe?
How long have you been, Pat? Maybe like 14 years, 15 years?
Something like that.
Yeah, like we lost touch for a bit, but we played together years ago, and we had a mutual friend, Ryan Lamb. And yeah, then we connected back, and I was lucky enough to coach with Pat, and here we are.
Patrice, I just wanted to do a little bit of an introduction for the people that don't know you, as well as Joe does. Just doing a little bit of research on you, and I always like to ask this question because I like to see how people gravitate their way towards a life into soccer. So just doing a little bit of research, I see that you went to Seneca, you did international business there, you went to York, did sociology as well. How did you get yourself so deep involved in Canadian soccer and the youth system?
When I attended York University, you know, we were in part of such a strong group of soccer junkies that I found my days and hours more and more was contributing to the sport. And then afterwards, when I did a one-year program at Seneca, my love and connection to the game continued to grow more and more. And then at those days, it was very good days of soccer, you know, with the Canadian Soccer League, or the old CPSL was just introduced.
Right.
And the league had just opened up and playing there. So, you know, I found myself more and more playing. And I played with, you know, by that age when I finished York, I was 24, 25. I played with some younger guys, which immediately allowed me to take a leadership role. And I think maybe those are the days that my coaching days perhaps started early.
Excellent. I always like to ask that because it's always funny. Everyone has a different background and a different path to get to where they are now. And I always like to ask that.
And I don't think you stopped, right, Pat? It just keeps going. It just kept going. It kept mounting where you've ended up and where you've been coaching. For those of you guys who don't know, Pat, you're coaching at Ryerson as well. You did some coaching at Ryerson.
Yeah.
Right?
I think after, you know, when I ended my playing days at Early due to several injuries, I think the first big job that I had was at Ryerson. You know, I worked with a great crew with Pevan Mosavar, who's done amazing things at UOIP, and
right.
Ramin Mohammadi, who's a great job, and Tony LaFerra. So I was very lucky to be a part of a brand new, very good coaching staff, and you know, we had a very good team in Ryerson that was just about the turnaround when they were starting to take the program to new heights and doing some big things.
And now that's a program that's perennially in the national rankings and going to national championships and contending for the OUA every year, so that's part of that.
Yeah.
Pat's also coached at York University. I mean, Pat, talk a little bit about that, so on, and working with Carm Isacco.
When I was presented the opportunity to do, you know, as much as I had a great time at Ryerson, you know, it's a great program, but I had a lot of my current and former players that were going to York. Being a York alum, you know, it meant a lot for me, from obviously the days of Yeoman to transition to being a Lion. It meant a great deal to coach at York, and, you know, and Carmen Isacco and myself, you know, we coached together from many years ago at North York Hearts of Surrey, so
right.
I was very familiar with him. So when he presented me that opportunity, I was very quick to take it, and I was a member of two very, very good teams. And in 2010, you know, we had a great run and won the Canadian National Championship in Toronto. And, you know, to this day, that's one of the best memories of my soccer days. And coaching, not even including playing.
And Pat's had a lot. I mean, if we were to list all those things, we'd be here for a long time, Reggie. But just to give everybody a rundown of it, Patrice, if I miss stuff again, I apologize. Let me know. Let us know. Let our listeners know. But Patrice also had great success, not only with winning the championships, which we'll talk about, but developing and getting players opportunities. Patrice was involved with, he mentioned, North York Arts Missouri, then Vaughan Soccer Club, which he is there currently. Also, of course, a lot of you guys might remember the CSL and SC Toronto, which was a brilliant, brilliant thing that Patrice was part of as well with Carm and the players there that they helped groom and you know, hone their skills and get them into different environments that went on from there is pretty amazing. We're going to talk about that too. So it's a vast, vast experience. And of course, now to current day, Patrice is coaching in with Vaughan, the soccer club, Vaughan Soccer Club, doing the Vaughan High Performance Program. He's the leader of that great showcase-based program, elite-level players, as well as coach of the Vaughan Missouri Men's League One side, which is, we've talked about it on the show a lot, about how important that is to the future development of the Canadian player, especially today, having a league to build on.
For those of you out there that listen to the Football Weekly podcast, you know, Joseph and I are both really big on the grassroots, the youth system, how it's set up, where our next who is coming from, Joe.
I leave it to Pat. You know, I mean, we want a star.
Our next Alex Bunbury.
That takes a star youth. But, you know, that's why we have Pat on. There's a lot of players that, that have, their household names now in Canadian soccer.
Right.
The nice thing about it is maybe we don't know that Patrice is one of the guys who had a lot to do with some of the guys, and we'll talk about that as we get further into it.
Well, hopefully we can say the next Fraser aired one day, right?
Sure. Or, hey, listen, we talk about TFC a lot here.
Right.
And, you know, there's two players currently on that roster that Patrice had a lot of contact with in Jay Chapman and Jonathan Osorio, and we'll talk about that a little after.
I wanted to get into the youth aspect of the sport in Canada. And I have a couple of issues.
He gets angry, eh, Pat?
I don't get angry as to, per se, but I mean, I just have a couple of questions that I like to ask people that are in it. Okay. Now, as far as the youth system in Canada and the training and the technical aspect, and I know you're doing the high performance program as well, which would probably help the technical aspect of, getting these players to where they need to be. Where do you think that the training in Canada, especially at the younger ages, needs the most improvement?
You know, Reggie,
if it does, if it does need improvement.
Yeah, I mean, listen, for me, things are measured by performance.
Right.
How do we talk about us being happy and not having to work as hard? I mean, that day I don't think will ever come. We want to keep pushing, but
right,
the inevitable goal is that we're looking for is making the World Cup. And,
exactly.
You know, and it looks like we have a great run coming up for us, but we've come short, and then, you know, the day when we lose to Honduras 8-1, we all go home and wonder what happened. And you're right, those are the questions. What happened? You know, where was it? What stage did we go wrong? And if you look at it statistically, you know, Dallas Cup, Milk Cup, U-17 World Cup, we seem to consistently make the U-17 World Cup.
Yeah.
Sean Fleming and his staff do a phenomenal job. I think in the past four U-17 World Cups, we made three of the four, which really shows that the foundation is there. So for me, the biggest issue lies that after 16, 17 years old, what happens? Where's the breakdown? Because we have yet to fail to make a U-20 World Cup since 1994. So it's quite ways ago. So that's, I think, where the breakdown is. I think the biggest issue has been the kids have had nowhere to play. Yeah. You know, Michael Petrasso, Fraser Hurd, Jordan Hamilton, and many boys that we mentioned have been able to go somewhere. But what happened to the other 14? What happened to the other 15 boys? Mm-hmm. It's just having had anywhere to play that allows them to compete at an intense level, a high level. So when it comes to competing with the likes of Jamaica, Costa Rica, Honduras, and El Salvador, they can meet that and even, you know, push further. So for me, been the biggest issue. I think we've done a good job, Reggie and Joe, with our grassroots. I think it's continuing to get better. I think you look at our 13, 14, 15 goals. We've got so many, you know, such a strong talent pool. But I do think NCAA soccer is going to help us out with what we need. I mean, it's done it for U.S., so why can't it do it for us?
That's a great point, and that's why we got Patrice on, because we want to know. Maybe not everybody knows. We know they don't know. But our guys are getting down there, and guys like Patrice are helping them get there and get those opportunities.
You look at a guy like Kyle Larin, you look at just this year, Reggie Larea, and you look at in the past year, you know, Canadians that have been able to be successful to make the jump to MLS and be drafted. There hasn't been too many of them, but I think you're going to see many more come through the ranks. And I think, you know, knock on wood, you're going to see more than a few Vaughan players coming through those opportunities because they've worked hard. We've been able to form connections with the right institutions where they're able to be placed in order to continue their growth as footballers and not just go to a program where they're standing still. So I think altogether, this is going to intertwine, and the ultimate answer is going to be for us to put these young men against, you know, the top CONCACAF players, and they'll be able to compete. I'm confident that they will be able to compete.
Just to cap off that comment you made, I'm really intrigued about the other 14 players when you mentioned guys like Frazier, Jordan Hamilton are going other places in order to further their career. And what about the other 14 players? I'm assuming it's because there's no league after, well, when I was playing, there was no league after 18, right? Is there any way we can get something here, or do you see anything coming down the pipe that where we can get another competitive league that stays up longer than 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I mean, many people would say, well, you know what? We already have 3 MLS teams.
Right.
You know, we already have Ottawa. We already have Edmonton.
Right.
We have 5 pro teams, so you should be able to do it. But the problem is that we're part of MLS, which is an American-based league. So it doesn't allow us and push us in the manner of playing Canadians. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at our very own Toronto FC. Think about the last week, how many Toronto kids played on that team.
That's right.
And the same can be said about Vancouver, the same can be said about Edmonton.
Right.
So I think for me the ultimate answer would be perhaps much like in U.S. where there's a USL Pro, we need the old Canadian Soccer League back.
An
opportunity to have a team in Winnipeg, Saskatoon, and a second team in Toronto, and really push the Canadian envelope and say, you know, you need to have at least 8 players in your roster that are Canadian at a certain age. Make it a development league. You know, that's why I really enjoy being a part of League One, Reggie, because, you know, the emphasis is youth. The emphasis is development. And, I mean, yes, it's great to win the league. It's great to have, you know, first place and all that. But it really emphasizes I'm giving a chance for the kids to play. So I think that's what we're missing the most.
You know, Reggie and Patrice talked about his experience in League One. That's a great point. Patrice always talks about competitive games, and that's what a lot of people in development talk about. Can we get these players in good scenarios where they're competitive in different environments where they're challenged? Patrice always talks about that. And anyone who's, you know, pushing the envelope and trying to get the best out of players, that's what we should be talking about. Patrice, let's just talk about 2 years ago. It was a pretty unique experience. A current player with Vaughan, actually two of them, Patrice, played in the League One Cup final at BMO Field, which you were on the bench, the winning side. The coach that day for Vaughan Azzurri, and you guys played Sigma. And the goalkeeper, Dane Sinclair, currently at University of Maryland, as well as Kamal Miller, who had a fantastic game, so did Dane actually, who was at Syracuse University. And we talked about those two players weren't even collegiate players then, and that was a, you know, an example of what a big competitive game and in that league and in that surrounding could do for their development. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It was great to have. I think our young men have to become men, and in order to do that, we have to put them in a situation where they're forced to sink or swim. You know, I think they got to get out of their comfort zone. And Kamal was, you know, many people know Kamal Miller, who's a 97, who's been a Vaughan for most of his life. And everybody knows he's a great footballer. Everybody knows he's a tough kid, great passer, and he's got a lot of tools. But in order for him to be better, let's put him up against Emery Walshman.
That's right.
Who was playing that day for Sigma as their target. And Emery, you know, is a 91 and Kamal's a 97. Playing a young man, six years older, who was already drafted in the MLS. And you could see the potential that Kamal had that day.
That's right.
He played out of his skin and showed things that we thought he might not be able to do. And, you know, Dane could be the carbon copy of a young man in the U.S., Zach Steffen. You know, not only do they look alike, they play alike. And Zach also went to Maryland. And to tell you an interesting story, Zach went to Maryland, had 2 great years, was offered potentially a GA deal, a homegrown deal, but he jumped right into Bundesliga with FC Freiburg. So for people who don't believe college soccer is a route for us to make the World Cup, for players to potentially jump to the next level, I'll give you Kontemsi, Bad Guzin, name you 100, Graham right. Zusi, so many players that have been able to use the league to jump to Europe and gain maturity. I mean, that's a lot of good, and I think it's going to serve a lot of purpose for Canadian players.
Oh, for sure. Patrice, you talked about putting these players in situations to be challenged, and I think that was a great example of it for sure. But for just the people out there listening, I think to understand what the everyday is with what you're doing with this high performance program, I just want to shed light, or maybe you could shed light on, for example, like you take groups that they would be the equivalent of not even college freshmen, even younger, right, which would be high school juniors, let's say, in their grade 11 year, if you're talking in Canada, to play against, you know, a Syracuse, which happened last year almost to this date. Talk about that and setting up those opportunities, going to a school like Penn State, a Big Ten school, and getting your group to travel down and play these schools. So how does this happen? And, of course, you know, what's the ultimate benefit?
You know, for young men, you could see after that game, Kumar looked differently on himself because he saw he did things that he never thought he could. And that's only because of the challenge and the opposition that he faced. So I think it's about setting a bar, an expectation about what you can do. So for us to go play Syracuse, it's about our team saying, you know what, it's not about necessarily my opposition, it's about me. I need to have my best game today. Yeah. And when you play Penn State, you'd say the same thing. I'm playing guys 4 or 5 years older. I need to play my best game today. And I think if we challenge our boys in training, and we challenge them mentally, physically, tactically, every day, every game, today needs to be the best you've performed. And then when comes the day after, today needs to be the best day. Those are the times that these young men start to build belief, set standards and expectations. You know, and you know, for us to go down and play a very competitive program like Syracuse and perform so well, you know, it gives these boys confidence. As both of you gentlemen know, a lot of this sport is about the psychological aspect and having confidence in yourself.
Definitely, Pat. And, you know, again, for the people listening, what an experience. The young men got to go. I was lucky enough to be with Patrice that day, and he does this all the time, takes groups. I mean, Kamal Miller, who ended up being a vital part of a Syracuse team that went to the College Cup, Final Four in college soccer, right? And Julian Boucher was on the other side of the pitch, who just got drafted, a Generation Adidas player in the MLS, and got drafted by DC United, I believe, Patrice? It was DC United, I think.
I believe so, too.
So,
yeah.
Again, great. Again, this is, you know, you can't buy this stuff. And Patrice talked about challenging players, and I can tell you firsthand, the unique thing about a program like what Patrice does is that after every training session, after every week, there's players that are evaluated, and they know what's expected and the high level of it. And again, Reg, we've talked about, you know, where was this before? And
almost, exactly.
Right? And whereas players were being developed by default, whereas now there are programs like this, and what's going on with Patrice's Vaughan High Performance Program that is giving these guys opportunities.
Right. Now, you said something earlier about the NCAA and how it's going to benefit the Canadian system that players are going to the NCAA and playing. Is there any possible way that, and I know there isn't, but I just want to hear from somebody who's in it, if there's any way to steal the model of the NCAA and build something like that here in Canada. It's great that two or three guys got four rides, but what about the other 12 guys? They have to be, they're good enough to play. And if you go down to the NCAA, there's guys that are okay still playing on the teams, playing with these guys. So there's no way that we can steal a model like that and create something like that here in Canada, is there?
You know, we can be done. I'm always been an optimist, but there's got to be a plan in place.
Right.
And I think it's a long-term plan. You know, the issue is the facilities, when you compare, are still not there. You know, the amount of money that these schools put into sports, Big Ten TV, you know, when you go to a basketball game and you watch, you know, 30,000 streaming kids, the amount of football money that it generates for each school, and that money helps all the athletic programs, is phenomenal. So, for us, the issue is we still don't have that one sport that's going to produce money. You know, even CIS football has yet to grasp a huge following, or CIS hockey. And I think when that day arrives, then we could see a rise across the entire athletic program. But, you know, facilities need to improve. I think there's some really good coaches. I think there's some fantastic players, but it's not as across the board. Some games aren't as competitive as you find there, and obviously the funding is not similar either. So I think what we see in front of us is only fair.
Yeah, Reg, I was just going to say, too, we're finding, too, we mentioned this player who got drafted in the MLS. We talked about Julian Boucher, formerly of Syracuse. Patrice, we're also seeing that not only like Canadians, well, you know, it's traditionally been going down to the States. Reggie was one of those players, played at UMBC. But a lot of internationals are finding their way into the NCAA and using that as a route to professional soccer, and in particular the MLS. You want to talk a little bit about that, Patrice, and how that's becoming more of the norm today?
You look at some of the bigger programs. Like, let's talk about UCF that's in Orlando. Obviously, there's some places that the climate's more favorable. You know, you look at the roster of most of the top programs, the likes of even North Carolina, Maryland. You know, we just drafted somebody out of Maryland.
That's right.
Ninth overall, TSC.
Japanese, yeah.
And the kid's Japanese. When he went to Maryland, he didn't speak a word of English.
Right.
So why are these foreign kids coming? Because I think they see the value of a strong education. Something that people don't know is that Big Ten, when you're on a larger package of a scholarship, if you were to leave after a year to go play MLS or to play pro, your scholarship is honored for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, you play a year and you leave, you come back, you're still going to come out with an Ohio State, Penn State, or a Rutgers degree. That's very valuable. So I think the foreign kids are seeing the level of education. And as we have seen with some of the economics across Europe, such as Spain and Italy and Greece, players are getting paid less and less, and
that's
the MLS
right.
is quite the opposite. So why not come to NCAA, get a great education, have a great experience, and then if you're good enough, you make it onto a league that's becoming more and more financially stable. And who knows, with the rise of Giovinco and Drogba giving his blessing about the league, I think we're about to see more and more players come to MLS and the league really take it to the new heights.
Well, Joe has said in the past that he thinks that MLS is going to be now the league where younger players are going to start coming from other parts of Europe and other parts of South America, even if they can't make their, I'd say, their adult team, I guess.
Yeah.
A team. They're going to come over to MLS and give it a hack here, right? So I think when it comes to the international aspect of the MLS, if we're talking about the MLS now, I think it's going to be more attractive to players that are maybe on the fringes of making the first team. Like a Giovinco, like we said. He wasn't playing when he was at UVA.
Yeah, he revitalized his career.
And now he's getting called back to the national team, right? So
how do you get to the MLS? Obviously, if you're a player who's played at a very good level, I'm sure you could contact an agent, contact, you know, the GM and get yourself on the books,
right.
Look at it and try to get it. What if you're a 16, 17-year-old boy that plays for, you know, Sunderland Academy, or if you're in the Helsinki FC or Copenhagen FC Academy, and you don't see that the first team guys are making a comfortable living? What decisions do you have?
Well, exactly.
So I think this is what NCAA is really broadening its horizon, and you could see so many Scandinavians and even Germans making a jump because, A, they see the level of education is important for them, and furthermore, they see the future that it's a ticket that allows them to get to the MLS.
I think we've said that a couple of times, too. I have one thing to say about the MLS. Actually, it was a quote from Pirlo. I don't know if you saw it. He came out and said, players coming out of the MLS are less informed on the tactics and the technical aspect, but are very physical.
Well, the guys coming from the NCAA to the MLS.
Oh, sorry,
right?
The guys coming from the NCAA to the MLS aren't very technical, aren't tactically aware. They're very physical. They're a lot physical. What do you say to someone who, well, it's Pirlo, right, saying this? But what do you think about
that's
that?
Pirlo.
Exactly.
It's funny.
Who'd rather not be touched?
Just, right.
You know, you got to always take the context of the information from who it's coming from.
Right.
The other day, Alex Hilal had an interview. I found it very funny. He went to Pirlo. He said, "Hey, how did it feel like to win Champions League?"
Yeah.
And his answer was, "Which one?"
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, but that seems like an answer you'd give.
Yeah. So I think if Pirlo went to Manchester City, we may find him saying the exact same thing.
That's right. Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
The English players aren't the most technical player. But I will say the NCAA game.
So that's the first half of our interview with Patrice Geiser. The second half of that interview will be in the second half of next week's show. So stay tuned for that. So that's it from us from the Football Weekly podcast this week. You can get to our podcast on our website, footballweekly.com. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM. join the forum, you know, join the community, get your ideas and topics out there. And as usual, download, share, follow, and enjoy. We'll catch you next week. Thanks.